Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Okay, let's just jump right in. We talk a lot about DNA as this, you know, fragile blueprint of life, but what actually keeps it stable when the whole system is under attack? What if the stability of your entire genome hinged on this tiny dynamic balancing act that cancer drugs are constantly trying to throw off?
That is the central question for today, because copying DNA replication is just inherently risky. It's constantly facing what we call replication stress, RS for short.
Right.
Think of it like turbulence on a plane.
Yeah.
The replication machine, these things we call replication forks, if they hit an obstacle, they have to slow down. They have to pause to avoid a crash.
And a molecular crash means, what, catastrophic DNA breaks?
Yeah.
Genomic chaos.
Exactly. And, you know, this isn't just some abstract problem. It is central to cancer.
Because cancer cells are dividing so fast.
They're dividing so fast, they generate huge amounts of this stress naturally. But here's the key. We actually exploit that vulnerability with chemotherapy. We use drugs like CPT or ETP that don't stop replication cold, but they intentionally make it harder.
So for a cancer cell to survive that kind of mild therapeutic stress, it all comes down to how well it can manage that pause. It has to hit the brakes, but not forever. Active fork slowing.
Precisely. And this is where the big surprise comes in. There's a protein called lamin AC. We usually think of it as static. Like an architect.
A scaffold.
It's the scaffolding. It forms the nuclear lamina. The structure holding the nucleus is shaped together.
Right.
The rigid frame.
Okay, the nuclear skeleton?
Yes. But what if that skeleton, that architect, is secretly also a dynamic regulator deep inside the nucleus? What if it's the one deciding whether a cancer cell survives chemo? That's what we're digging into.
So the quiet architect is actually the traffic cop. That's a fantastic twist. We're diving into a mechanism that connects what nuclear structure, these epigenetic marks, and the actual repair machinery.
It's a beautiful piece of work. It really connects structural biology with genome maintenance.
Before we get into how they figured all this out, let's give credit where it's due. Today, we celebrate the work of Veronica Chernenseva, Joanna Paulson, Daniel Gonzalez Acosta, and the entire team.
Their work, mainly out of the University of Zurich and the Erasmus University Medical Center, really moved the field forward. Their methods were key.
Let's talk about that. Surviving the stress of chemo. You mentioned this idea of replication fork plasticity. What does a fork actually do to survive?
So when the fork hits damage, say from a chemo drug like CPT, it doesn't just stop and fall apart. That would be a disaster.
Yeah.
It adapts. It remodels its own structure.
Remodels how?
It temporarily changes from a three-way junction, the normal Y shape, into a four-way junction. We call that a reversed fork.
Okay.
Imagine a zipper hitting a snag. Instead of ripping the fabric, you might zip it backward a little to ease the tension. That's what the fork is doing. It buys the cell time.
So the reverse fork is the pause button. But after the repair, the cell has to hit play again. What does that?
That's a specialized enzyme, the RECQ1 helicase. Its job is to restart those paused forks. But the timing is everything. Too soon, and the fork crashes. Too late, and everything grinds to a halt.
So RECQ1 needs a controller. A break.
It does. And that break is a process called perylation.
Ah, PRP inhibitors. That PAR.
The very same. The enzyme PRP1 synthesizes this chemical modification called PR, which acts as a break on RECQ1. So you have this delicate balance. Fork versus the pause, perylation is the break, and RECQ1 is the engine. That's active fork slowing.
And the hypothesis is that lamin AC, the architect, is somehow pulling the strings on all of this.
Right. And back to its dual identity. We know a lot of it is in that rigid lamina at the edge of the nucleus, but a big chunk of it is also soluble, floating around inside the nucleus, in the nucleoplasm, with its partner, LAP2.
And previous studies couldn't really see its dynamic role.
No, because they would get rid of it permanently, and the cell would have time to adapt, to compensate. You'd miss the immediate effect.
Right. So if you want to see what this dynamic regulator is doing in the moment, you have to take it out fast.
You need speed. And that's where the methodology here was so brilliant. They use something called A2 technology. It's an auxin-inducible degrand system.
A molecular switch to just get rid of a protein on demand.
A very fast switch. They could get almost complete depletion of lamin AC in their cells in just 24 hours.
Wow. That's fast enough to see the immediate consequences before the cell can rewire itself.
It's the difference between seeing a car after a crash and actually watching the brake failure happen in real time.
So once they had that, they needed the tools to see what was happening at the single molecule level.
Yes, and they used a whole suite of them. First up, DNA fiber spreading assays. This is really the gold standard for measuring the speed of replication forks.
How does it work?
You label newly copied DNA with one color, apply the stress, then switch to a second color. Then you stretch out the DNA fibers and just measure the lengths of the color tracks.
So if the second track is shorter, you know the brakes worked. The fork slowed down.
Precisely. Then they needed to show that lamin AC was actually at the scene of the crime, so to speak. For that, they used proximity ligation assays, or PLA.
That's the one that only lights up if two molecules are basically touching, right?
Within 40 nanometers, yeah. It proves physical interaction. And then for the forks themselves.
You have to see them.
You have to see them. So they brought out the electron microscope. With EM, you can literally count the three-way forks versus the four-way reversed forks. No ambiguity.
And the last piece, this chrome stretch technique, that's what tied it all to the epigenetics.
Yes, this was the key connection. It's a method that lets you map specific chemical marks on the DNA-like H3K9E3 directly onto those individual replication tracks from the fiber assay.
Okay, that is a powerful toolkit. So let's get to the payoff. What happened when they flicked the switch, got rid of lamin AC, and then hit the cells with that mild chemo stress?
Okay, so there are five main findings that build the whole story.
Huh.
Finding number one, lamin AC is dynamic and absolutely essential for fork slowing.
The fiber assays showed that.
Well, first, the PLA data showed it was interacting with replication centers all throughout the nucleus. But then, yes, the fiber assays. When they got rid of that nucleoplasmic pool of lamin AC, or its partner, LAP2, the forks slowing was completely rescued.
Wait, rescued means it was gone. The forks just ignored the stress and kept going full speed.
Exactly. The brakes failed. And this had real consequences. They saw a huge increase in chromosomal breaks when lamin AC was missing. The loss of that protein leads directly to genomic instability.
That's a massive effect. The architect is definitely the traffic cop. So if the forks are moving too fast, that has to point to the engine, to RECQ1, running wild.
It does. And that's finding number two. The defect is totally RECQ1 dependent. They did a critical experiment. They took the cells without lamin AC, where the forks were running wild, and then they also got rid of RECQ1.
And what happened?
The slowing came back. The pace was restored to the normal, slow, stressed state.
So removing lamin AC unleashes RECQ1. Lamin AC must be what's holding it back.
That's the conclusion. Lamin AC is required to negatively regulate RECQ1. And the EM data confirmed it beautifully. In normal stress cells, about 30% of the forks are in that paused, reversed state.
Okay.
When you remove lamin AC, that number drops to like 10 or 20%. RECQ1 is restarting them way too early. But when you co-deplete RECQ1, the number of reverse forks goes right back up to 30%.
A perfect genetic rescue. But how does a structural protein like lamin AC control an enzyme? This has to connect to the brake fluid to perylation.
It does. That brings us to finding number three, the link to perylation. They use PLA again to measure PAR levels right at the replication factories. And when lamin AC was gone, the local PAR levels just plummeted. Less PAR means less inhibition on RECQ1. That explains the runaway engine.
So lamin AC loss causes the brake fluid to leak out, letting RECQ1 speed up. The ultimate test for that would be to artificially add the brake fluid back in, right?
Right, and they did. They used a drug called a PR inhibitor, or PRG. Mm-hmm. It stops PR from being broken down, so its concentration goes up.
And in the lamin AC depleted cells?
It fully restored the fork slowing.
Yeah.
It's definitive proof. Lamin AC maintains stability by keeping local PIR levels high.
Okay, the chain of command is getting clearer. Lamin AC controls PAR, which controls RECQ1. But why does lamin AC control PAR? That feels like it has to be about the physical state of the DNA, the chromatin.
You got it. That's the deepest and, I think, most surprising layer. Finding number four, H3K9A3 and chromatin compaction are the key. They found that this specific epigenetic mark, H3K9A3, which is a signal for really tightly packed silent DNA, it actually accumulates on the DNA right at the fork, even under just mild stress.
So the cell compacts the DNA around the stalled fork to stabilize it, and that compaction somehow promotes perylation.
That seems to be the mechanism. And lamin AC is required to create that compacted state. When they used a drug to inhibit G9A, the enzyme that puts that H3K9A3 mark on.
Let me guess, it looked exactly like losing lamin AC.
It phenocopied it perfectly. unrestrained forks, low PAR, and critically, it was also rescued by getting rid of RECQ1. The physical structure of the chromatin dictates the entire regulatory outcome.
And the chrome stretch data must have sealed the deal there.
It did. It showed directly that without lamin AC, you just don't get that accumulation of HUT9E3 at the stress forks.
So why does the mark disappear when lamin AC is gone? What is the final specific job lamin AC is doing?
That's the last piece of the puzzle, finding number 5. Lamin AC controls demethylation. It turns out lamin AC's job is to stop that protective H3K9A3 mark from being removed too early. It does this by inhibiting a specific demethylase enzyme called KDM3A.
So KDM3A is the enzyme that erases the mark. Lamin AC's job under stress is to basically put KDM3A in handcuffs to make sure that protective shield stays up long enough for perorylation to happen and the brakes to be applied.
That's the complete circuit. Yeah. And the final proof. If you inactivate KDM3A in the lamin AC depleted cells, you rescue everything. The H3K9E3 mark comes back and the fork slowing is restored.
That is just a stunningly complete model. So when we zoom out, what does this all mean for biology, for medicine?
Well, the biggest thing is it redefines lamin AC. It's not just a passive scaffold. It's an active structural and regulatory hub inside the nucleus that is essential for genome stability.
And this has to have implications for diseases like laminopathies or even aging, right? Those have always been blamed on the big structural problems with the nuclear shell.
Exactly. This work suggests a whole new mechanism. Maybe some of the genome instability in those diseases isn't from the shell cracking, but from this nucleoplasmic pool failing to do its job for protecting replication forks. It's a totally separate function.
And for cancer therapy. This feels huge. We are constantly targeting these pathways.
It's extremely relevant, especially for PRP inhibitors, PARAPIs.
Because if some cancers have low lamin AC function, that would mean they naturally have lower PAR levels at their replication forks.
Right, and that could completely change how sensitive or resistant they are to a PRP inhibitor. It adds a whole new layer clinicians might need to think about when they're designing treatments.
So lamin AC levels could be a predictive biomarker for PRP therapy.
Potentially, yes. Now, the paper is great about pointing out there are still open questions.
Yeah.
We still don't know the exact target that perylation hits to inhibit RECQ1 in a crowded cell nucleus.
And what about that weird finding that lamin AC levels actually seem to decrease near the fork during stress? If it's the scaffold, why would it move away?
They suggest it might not be moving away so much as the fork itself is remodeling so dramatically into that four-way structure that it just increases the physical distance. Future high-res imaging will be needed to really see the nanoscale architecture there.
Okay, so let's synthesize this for everyone listening. What is the single biggest take-home message?
The main message is that lamin AC, the protein we saw as just the nuclear scaffold, is actually an active guardian of the genome under stress, and it works by preventing replication forks from restarting too early.
And the mechanism it uses is just incredible. It uses its internal nucleoplasmic pool to maintain this protective epigenetic shield. It blocks the eraser enzyme, KDM3A, to keep the repressive H3K9AME3 mark in place.
And that compacted DNA state is what allows for high local perylation, which puts the brakes on the RECQ1 restart engine. It ensures a safe, controlled pause during chemotherapy.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to chew on. Given that this lamin AC H3K9ME PARP axis is such a clear mechanism for drug tolerance in cancer, what new combination therapies could we design to specifically break that chain? Could we, say, target KDM3A to make resistant tumors sensitive again?
A fascinating question for the future of cancer therapy.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science base by base. Lights tick forward where the coal wheels spin. City mornings on a glass blue lake. Threads of time in a cave.
Slow the wheel, hold the line, let the velvet make the chaos kind, wrap a ribbon of light around.